Hello, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Oh, I don't know about that.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place.
So what do I do?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
This is wonderful advice. This is what I needed to hear.
You're right on track with this. You're right on track.
And everybody make a mistake.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are the best thing that has ever happened to people.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Would that be an overstatement or what? You are the best thing that happened to people. I'd want to tone that down. Andrew, you might want to adjust that. You are the best thing that happened to a few people. Mostly your kids, hopefully your wife. A couple folks in your family. That'd be good enough. Or you could even say you're the best thing to happen to people in your neighborhood. You got to qualify it there. You can't say people because that kind of implies, well, a whole 8 billion of them. And I got to believe that most of that 8 billion doesn't listen to this show. I have no data to support that, but I'm just going to speculate. Real nice to have you with me. This is The Doctor Is In. This is the variant Look Back Friday. Take previous calls. Edited at the capable hands of the producer man, Andrew Krucek, there in Ann Arbor. And then play them, not in their entirety, in pieces. And the pieces are those pieces that Andrew believes are the most warranted for repeat. And then I step into the scene and add things I want to talk about more in something that the person brought up, but we didn't go in that direction, or a word that was used either by me or by someone else that I didn't catch the first time through, and I want to explain it. Or typically the reason is that the question is part of a broader phenomenon that occurs to people, as in best thing that happened to people. And so we will talk about that. I was 25 and a half. I remember it because I had just heard about Pearl Harbor. It was just happening, or thereabouts. I was working at the VA in Brecksville, Ohio. I was working at day treatment under the supervision of a man named Dr. David Firo. I formed a great relation with Dave, and he was in my wedding party. Dave wanted me to have a group. He said, get the guys, Ray, you put a group together, a group to deal with. Now, these were guys that had a history of mental problems. Many of them had been hospitalized, but they were now functioning in the community either through a group home. Some of them were independent living. But they would come during the day for 6-7 hours at the VA for activities, structures, setups. So Dave had me put together a group. I remember the first meeting was 6-8 guys. So I thought, okay, man, you know, I'm a PhD student. Well, I hadn't really gotten my PhD yet, but I was on an internship, and I was on my way there. I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be great. Talk about this with these guys. Be smooth, and I can offer my insights on life as a 25-year-old, you know, and they would respect that, of course. So as we went around and introduced ourselves, I got to a fella that had been in prison. I don't remember how long, but he had served time. Not county jail, prison. And he was surly. Looked like he was in his 30s. Long hair. I don't remember if he was tatted up. In those days, tats were a lot less common. So I got to him, and he didn't tell us his name. The first thing he said is, you ever been in prison? I said, no, I haven't. What are you going to tell me then? Now, at that point, I had to be careful. I had to slow down in my response. It was very important that I analyze the words that would come out of my mouth. But more important than that, I wanted my tone to be confident. I didn't want to say, "Well, I never, okay, I'm not sure." I don't want to do that. So I said, "Why do you think I can't say anything at all helpful to you if I've not served time?" "Because you got to know what it's like. You got to have the experience." "Do I? What experience do I have to have? What do I need?" "You need to know what you go through, what it does to you, how it affects you." "Can I know that from talking to you?" "Yeah, but you can't know it personally." "You're right. I can't." And then he said, "How old are you?" 25. I wanted to say, "I'm 25 and a half." And I wanted to say, "But I'm an old 25. But I didn't. I just said, "I'm 25. He goes, "You're a kid." I said, "Yeah, you're right. You're right. In the overall scheme of things, I'm still a young buck." That guy, however resistant he was to being in that group, and that really was what it was revealing something that an awful lot of people think, which is, if you haven't traveled in their shoes, if you haven't been in an experience like theirs. Now, there's the first problem. Nobody has identical experiences. You can have similar experiences, but they're not identical. And the view is, if you haven't, then you really can't offer any useful advice. You're out of touch. You don't know. I don't recall if I said this to this guy. I think when I was 25, it hadn't occurred to me yet, but it's occurred to me now and a lot of times since. I said, "Well, I'm not a woman, so I suspect by your thinking I can't really do any kind of counseling with women either. And you're right, I've never been in jail, so I can't counsel anybody who's spent any time incarcerated. I've not used drugs, so that wipes out that whole population. I didn't run away from home or defy my parents when I was 15, so I'm not sure I can work with these severe behavior problemed adolescents. I've never been divorced, so I guess I can't work with divorced people." Taking that reasoning out to its extension, I would be limited to working at that time with single white males with no children, who have lived a pretty stable upbringing. About it. Certainly couldn't be a psychologist. And you know, priests couldn't be priests either. Because folks come to priests with all kinds of life problems around marriages, around children, around family dynamics. The priests don't have children, they're not married. They don't live day-to-day in a family, at least in the Roman rite. In other rites, they do. So the poor priests can't either. They're stuck in the same misthinking that gentleman was stuck in. Here's another problem with that line of thinking. Let's suppose that I'm on the edge of divorce. I go to a counselor who has been divorced 3 times. Do you suspect that counselor would give me guidance on how to remain in my marriage, or do you think that counselor might be more inclined to hear my troubles in my marriage and see divorce as a very, very viable option, even though I'm a Catholic and I don't want to get divorced? How likely would that be? I said to the gentleman in our group in closing, I said, you know, it's because I haven't been in prison that maybe I have something to offer you in how to stay out of prison. I thought about that when I was 25. I was pretty proud of myself. It wasn't the first time somebody said that to me. I remember my first book was called You're a Better Parent Than You Think, and I wrote it before I had children. It was published before I had children. And the number one objection to that book was, do you have any children? I said, no. But I was a child once, and I've been pretty childish in my time. And I look back on that book, and a lot of it in there is close to how I think now. A lot of it in there is advice that I would look at and say, yeah, I could see myself giving that advice even now. 10 kids later and 40 years of experience later, yeah, of course. Now, it's been expanded, but the advice in the book before I had children, if I looked at it, and a lot of people still buy that book, it's a heavy seller, is useful. They don't say when they comment or review it, wow, this sure sounds like coming from a guy who doesn't know kids at all. They don't say that. Why? Well, because I, even at the time when I wrote the book, I had talked with many parents. And I learned from their experience without having to experience it myself. My most recent book is called Taught by 10, A Psychologist's Father Learns from His Children. And in it, I offered some of the things that as a parent I experienced, but most of them dovetailed with what I had already expected from parenthood. But some of it was personal. Some of it was I had to know if this is how I would react in these emotional situations. It's one thing to say, here's advice. It's another to say, okay, what kind of emotions do I have to get over to give this kind of advice and to practice it myself? When somebody says to you, have you walked in my shoes? What they're really saying is, in many cases, I might not want to hear what you have to say. Because if you said something that they wanted to hear, it wouldn't matter to them if you haven't walked in their shoes. I'm Dr. Ray.
Welcome to an Advanced Dentistry Center family. This is Dr. Metti, and our team strives to treat you like family in a loving and compassionate way as we focus on serving you in a Christ-like manner. We do this by emphasizing prevention and general well-being for a lifetime. Our private practice is small, personal, state-of-the-art, and innovative, with the goal to educate and motivate our patients in improving their oral health. It is through a partnership with you that you will achieve the goals for your smile. Advanced Dentistry is serious about the level of care we provide, with attention to details and an exceptional level of care, skill, and judgment. We are thrilled for the opportunity to serve you.
Dr. Matthew and the team invite you to visit them at AdvancedDentistryCenter.com or call them at 248-594-9592. That's 248-594-9592. AdvancedDentistryCenter.com.
When is the last time you really tried to understand someone? Where they were coming from, that is. I reached out to a few people following some social media commentary regarding politics and the COVID-19 pandemic because we clearly were not on the same page. No one took me up on the offer for that one-on-one meeting instead of hashing out differences on a public platform. However, that does not deter me from trying to understand where the other person's coming from. We may not always agree, but what happened to finding common ground? I first heard this principle after reading Stephen Covey's book, 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. But the principle dates back much further than when he first wrote the book. It's a Christian principle. In Proverbs, it reads, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. Scripture is filled with this principle. We must first try to understand before being understood. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, communications evangelist and host of Epiphany.
The Springer Guarantee is no longer part of this program. Jerry Springer has since passed away, and his show has long since been off the air. But it was in effect. We guaranteed that you or your children would never be on Jerry Springer after 3 full tune-ins to this program. I was hoping that it would be partial tune-ins. The research is coming in. They have to be full. And you can spread them out over a period of time, usually about 2 years. But Springer Guarantee is off. But we're looking for other guarantees, maybe reality show guarantees. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is The Doctor Is In. The version? No. Don't want to say version anymore. Got to say variant. The variant of the program is Look Back Friday. We're going to go to one of our previous calls. We'll play it in part. And then I, hopefully, will have something to say in whole. Let's see where I want to go with this. We got that's going to take us to, better go to the shorter one there. Let's go to Donna from Pennsylvania. You have a 95-year-old mom. Yep. Is she living with you?
No, she has a townhome of her own right next to my twin sister's townhome.
Is your mom pretty clear?
Yes, she is. Oh. But lately, last few years, she's a very sharp woman. She's bright. She's with it, you know. But the last few years, she is altering things people say to her, especially things that maybe disagree with her opinion or she doesn't like what they say. Her take on it is, they're being mean to me, and she has a whole nother dialogue that never was spoken that she will report either to me against my sister and her husband or to my sister against me and my husband, but mostly about my sister who lives right next door to her and her husband.
When she says she has a whole other dialogue, when you say that she has a whole other, what does that mean?
Yep. Suppose I said to her, I recall once my husband said to her, she was rather short with him in the restaurant. He was trying to take her coat, and he said, oh, I'm just trying to take your coat. I know, but I can't get it off yet. And he said, that's okay. You don't have to be mad about it. And my mom looked at me and said, I said, well, yeah, Mom, you really snapped. Well, her take on it was that Doug said to her, oh, Mom, I'm sick and tired of you saying mean things to me, and that we both concurred with that. And nobody said it. And this is going on, and it's just getting worse. And we're at our wit's end. We don't know how to handle this. And if you call her on it, she'll say, what do you think, I'm making this up? I'm lying?
Okay. Donna, you ready? Here's my advice.
Yeah.
Don't call her on it. Do you know why?
Okay.
Because you just gave me the answer. You realize you were this smart, did you?
No.
Because she said, do you think I'm making this stuff up?
Yeah.
So what she's saying is, to her, what her brain is twisting and turning around, what she hears, is very real.
Really?
Yeah. My guess would be that...
So vicious. Like, we love her dearly and wouldn't even dream raising our voice to her.
But here's the thing. Would you tell me that your mother never used to be like this?
It's only in the last few years. But, however, I will tell you this. My mother takes everything personally and always has.
But she was never nasty about it, right? She's never nasty about it. She was never nasty about it.
Oh, she'll go away and sulk.
Okay, she'll sulk, but she won't attack.
She'll go away and sulk all my life.
I can't say that. I can't say this from here, Donna, but here would be my guess. Are you... Her governor is slipping. In other words, she's 95 years old.
Yeah.
And there's probably a pretty good chance she's experiencing some organic deterioration. And one of the early signs of this is a governor slippage. In other words, things that in the past she wouldn't have said and she would have gone and sulked about, now she's going to not only tell you what you said, but she's going to believe to herself that's what she heard.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So my suggestion is don't take any of it personally anymore. Don't try to correct her. Just say, I'm sorry, Mom. Sorry. Forgive me.
Well, one thing I do say is, gee, Mom, I don't think that sounds like something Fred would say. You know, that's my sister's husband. What do you think I'm making up?
There you go.
Then I get
exactly.
That.
What do
well,
you
what
think?
What do I say? I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything.
Recording these things.
No, she says, you know what he said to me the other day? I can't believe this. He said, blah, 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 blah. Wow. Gee, sorry to hear that, Mom.
Just, like, agree with her? Or?
Yes, because to her it's very real.
Oh, my gosh. But she's thinking such bad things about them. It's just not right.
Well, she's not thinking such bad things about them. Her brain is tricking her.
Oh.
Now, I can't say that for sure. I don't know. But
I know.
It would be to be expected that some of this is starting to happen. This reveals, you heard it in Donna's voice, the frustration of watching the personality alter. I saw a statistic that approximately 50% of people age 85 have some cognitive impairment. 95? I think that frustration for Donna is that her mom was always kind of difficult this way in terms of sulking, but she never actually was mean and accusatory like this. And she's wondering, why is she doing this? She's not doing it on purpose, more than likely. And I think that it will only get worse. It's the way it goes. Donna is saying, I don't want her to think this of us. Well, I don't think there's anything Don's going to do about that. There are going to be those circumstances, as long as they continue to interact with her mom, which I think they want to do because they love her, that she's going to neurologically make these misconnections. It's going to happen. And I think Donna's surprise indicated that she wasn't even entertaining that as an option. That, in fact, her mom's cognitive processes were getting a little mixed neurologically, and it allowed her, or it enabled her, to make these kinds of, well, almost quasi-hallucinations. She thought she heard what she didn't hear. Not all that unusual. That kind of accusatory, semi-paranoid thinking is coming out. And that's why Donna and her husband and anybody that associates with Mom closely has to recognize that from this point forward, this is going to happen. And you don't dispute it. The instant you do, Mom is going to say what she kept saying to Donna. You think I'm lying? I heard it. Exactly, because she did hear it. In her mind, that's what was said. She's not making it up. It's very real. That's hard for us to adjust to, especially when, for the most part, Donna's mom probably still functions okay. So when these kind of little isolated incidents happen, the thought is, what's that all about? Well, that's typically the way dementia begins, as a kind of hit and miss, sort of inexplicable conduct. Not all the time, but it is episodic. Thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is Look Back Friday. Let's see what call we have in the queue. We have an anonymous wife because her husband is upset that the house is messy. And just as a sidelight, they have three little ones. You do have four, right? Do I remember correctly?
Well, actually, we do technically have four, but one's in eternity. So,
okay.
So we have three running around.
And they're all little, right? So they create messes wherever they go.
Yes.
How upset is your husband over the clutter, the chaos, the mess?
Well, it depends. It really depends on the day. I think certainly things like work stress, family stress tend to aggravate him as well. Anytime we have guests over, he seems to get very agitated. But even sometimes on like Sunday mornings, before church, I've come into the playroom and found him, you know, after I've done the best I can to try to tidy, and clean, you know, sometimes I'll find him like frantically vacuuming or you know, pulling up the rug and finding all of the little things that the kids have shoved underneath. You know, there have been times, in our marriage when he's been extremely stressed and hasn't been able to verbalize it to me. And then he's kind of exploded over the state of the house or whether it's real or perceived. You know, certainly I'm not perfect. I'm not a perfect housekeeper. On an average day, he'll kind of get a bit annoyed, if the house is a mess when he's finished with work. But on an average day, he won't just kind of explode or anything like that.
You just see this low level of irritation.
Yes. And it kind of simmers until it explodes.
Has he ever said to you something along the lines of, I know I do this, I know I'm being unreasonable about this, it's just something that nags at me and I'm trying to get better with it? Or no, does he view it as, this place is a mess and you're not doing a whole lot about it?
He has told me, specifically he said, I want to say is are things I know I shouldn't say. And so he's kind of, I guess he's definitely working on it. And he realizes, he recognizes that I do work hard to try to keep the
house. That's good. That's good that he gives you credit for that, because that'll help. If he's going to get better at this, he's got to recognize that he has some role in this. So that's good. That's the good news.
Yes.
What if you went to him and said, what would you like to see in the house, in the environment here, that you would feel more at peace? Give me specifics. Well, you know, I come home and the kids' stuff's all over the floor. Okay, now it's just chaos. It just creates chaos. Or the counter's never clean. Or, you know, I come in here and I see a coat over here and I see this over there and I go up in our room and there's clothes on the floor. Can he be specific?
Okay.
Tell him you want specifics.
Yeah, that's a good point. Generally, he will not give me specifics unless there's something that's really an eyesore.
Well, yeah, it's got to get to nuclear warhead type stuff before he says, "All right, I've had enough." But
yes,
tell him you need specifics, because the only way you can attack a specific is to know what it is. So if he says, "Well, the kid's stuff's all over the floor," that just drives me crazy. Instead of saying, well, they're little kids, come on, there's 5, 3, and 1. What do you expect me to do? You do that and forget it. It's going to be a fight. Say,
okay.
You look at the clock, half an hour before he comes home, you go pick everything up. Pick it up. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like his trip switch from what you're saying anyway, is involved when he walks in the door and it hits him. I'm walking into this chaos. Now, you and I can say he needs to lighten up. He needs to relax. He needs to realize he's got little kids and there's no way his poor wife can keep up with all of that. And hopefully he will. But from your perspective, the thing you can do is to say, I want to know exactly what it is so that I can fix it. And what will happen is I think he'll feel like you're not telling him he's being unreasonable. You're saying, okay, let me see what I can do about it. Now, if you say, I think he's being unreasonable, and if 92 out of 100 people would say, I think he's being unreasonable, so what? Because he doesn't think he is. So what you got to do is try to take a little bit of that first sight response out of the picture. So then he feels like, okay, she's trying to do what I asked. In marriage counseling, a sore spot comes up. Typically, one of the spouses wants the other to see reason, to change, to understand the position. For example, in this case, we got three kids, five and under. What do you expect? You need to adjust your take on this. Now, how long that particular conflict can go on in marriages, it can be years. You need to think differently about this. You need to see it from my perspective. Unfortunately, if all the reasoning in the world, if all the arguments in the world don't change the other person's perspective, that's why I asked kind of heavily, does he show some insight into a little bit of why this might be the case? And she said, yes, that's a good sign. If she were to change what she can change, I mean, she may not be able to get rid of all the messiness. Come on, you got three little kids. We had 10 under 12. Me being a neatnik, can you imagine what that did to me? I twitched for years. So if she can make some obvious tinkerings, I would call them, in the mess of the place. If he's a reasonable guy at all about this, he'll soften. He will soften. He'll see that she's trying rather than disputing him and saying, well, you know, you need to understand this. This happens in marriages all the time where it's the other person just won't understand it. And I frustrate myself endlessly because they won't understand it. Rather than, all right, let me see your perspective. Let me see what I can do to meet your perspective. Now, I want to address one more point about this on the other side of the break. And it's a critical point, and it's one of the main resistances to not altering one's behavior in the direction of the spouse's argument. Thank you for keeping me company, however long you have chosen to, or however long you can endure. Either way, I'm grateful. This is The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi, clinical psychologist. Don't do therapy here. Don't do diagnoses. But we offer some thoughts and ideas about living a better life, a more faith-filled life, as it interacts with some of the better principles of psychology these days. This is Look Back Friday, where we take previous calls and comment on them a little more extensively. The call before the break was an anonymous caller, a wife. 5, 3, and 1-year-old children inhabit that house. Her husband gets variously upset because of the messiness in the house caused by the little ones. And, of course, I didn't delve into this because you can't on a very short radio call, but if this were in my office, I would ask how much is he saying that is his wife's style is to be cluttering or living with material chaos. But we're going to just assume that a lot of this is just the normal byproduct of little children and their stuff every which place. Talked a little bit about, okay, how do you meet him? How do you find out what exactly it is? You need specifics on why he thinks this, why he reacts this way, and the fact that she pointed out that he's more likely to react badly when he's having his own stress-filled day at work, which leads to a more sour mood. Now, in giving her the advice to find out what it is exactly that most bothers him about the messy level of the house, she's not yielding to his perspective. As I said before the break, so very often in marriage counseling, you see another person absolutely desperate to get the other person to change their view. And let's limit it to day-to-day things. We're not going to talk about, well, you know, I think you need to change your view about having adulterous relationships. Let's talk about situations like this one. Two people living together, and they have different perspectives on how to live better together regarding things like the house, finances, etc. You so often want the person to change their perspective. You got to come around to thinking about it this way because this is the better way to think about it. Just so often it's also be the way I think about it. If you reach toward them and try to get specifics, details, what is it that you would like to see? To the degree that you can move in that direction, to sort of kind of reach that way, you're more likely to get them to soften. Now, the fear on that, which I said I would address, is that, oh, well, they'll just run with it then. They'll just think that they're totally right and I'm totally wrong, and I'm just trying to get along with them because I think the way they think about it is the right way to think about it. And that's why a lot of people won't do that. Surprisingly, though, if you're dealing with a reasonable person at some level, I know I'm hearing all of you say, you don't know my husband, you don't know my wife. I'm hearing you say it, I know. But keep in mind, if you've had friction over these incidents for 27 years, everybody can look pretty unreasonable about them. If you reach toward them, that's your best move in getting them to recognize, okay, maybe the way I look at it isn't 100% accurate. So if she attempts to find out what her husband wants or would like about the state of that house that would make him less upset, she finds that out. If she can work that into her day-to-day routine somehow, some way, and he notices it, he notices her efforts, unless he's a complete jerk, he will probably appreciate what she's trying to do. What has she got to lose? I mean, I'm assuming this has been a disagreement for years. I mean, since little kids, maybe before. And that's what I would ask her in therapy too. Was this an issue in your marriage before children? Then how much of this is you and how much of this is the kids? And typically we cling to our perspective on things. For example, if she thinks he just doesn't get this, he does not get this, he has no idea what I have to do to keep this place in the kind of shape that he would want me to keep it in, he goes, he comes back, I've been struggling with this all day. If she clings to that, then they're just going to be at loggerheads for who knows how long. Here's the other complication. She said they have one child in heaven. So that's four kids in 5 years. Does that indicate that they welcome life? And that there's a pretty good chance they won't just have three kids, they'll have four, five, six, seven. Now what about the chaos? Unless you can dragoon one of the older kids, pay him $5 a week to clean up everything all the time. You can do that. But they have to get a little older to be able to do it efficiently. That's the point. In relatively stable marriages who have these day-to-day friction points, people think, well, if I move toward the perspective of my spouse, they're just going to take advantage of that. Much of the time, they don't. Much of the time, it's surprising that they actually respond in your direction. I'm Dr. Ray.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 40 years of experience. 17,000 current students. Pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton. Some of our children. Tell you this. Two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
How does God's method of governing provide a role model for human governors? God is a delegator. He has not, the Catholic Catechism points out, willed to reserve to himself all exercise of power. He entrusts to every creature the functions it is capable of performing according to the capacity of its own nature. God displays great regard for human freedom. Inspired by God, human governors should behave as instruments of divine providence and practice the principle of subsidiarity, which ordains that a community of a higher order should not interfere in the internal life of a community of a lower order, depriving the latter of its functions. The Catechism stresses that the principle of subsidiarity sets limits on state intervention. The collective ends of society can never justify using means that trample individual rights. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I better get right to it here because I'm going to be short on time. Let's go to Dave from Michigan, who takes care of his mother-in-law. That's no problem there, but he wishes he'd get a little bit of help.
I just need to know how to release some of my anxiety and anger toward my brothers and sisters-in-laws who don't communicate with her. I don't care if they don't communicate with me, but they don't seem to want to or take the time to communicate with their mom by phone, come and visit, nothing. And it's been 5 years. She's 98 and a half years old. She has dementia. But in the moment when you're talking to her, she enjoys the conversation and she has good memories to talk about. But they don't, I don't understand, because I lost my mom early on when I was 21. I don't understand why there's such lack of interest in talking to her. The anger is building up in me. I don't know how to release it.
Well, I don't know either, Dave, but I'll make a wild guess. And this is not accusatory. Don't let me get in trouble. Let me just say that most often when I see this, and it's very common, very, very common, it is based upon selfishness.
Yeah.
I want to live my life. I want to do my things. I don't want to be bothered with that. I got places to go, yeah. People to see. Is your wife the oldest of the siblings?
No, there's eight of them, and she's the fourth. And her sister was kind of the caretaker 5 years, 6 years ago, but she died of cancer. And my wife promised her that she would take care of her, and this promise has lasted much longer than we thought. But it's been... my mother-in-law is an interesting character because she lived through the Great Depression, World War One, World War Two. She lost her brother at Normandy. She talks to me about it. I find it interesting, and I have good conversations with her. I just can't comprehend and get past that they don't want to talk to her at all.
You know your problem, Dave? You know what your problem is?
What?
You expect people to be good.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I would look at something like that, and being a shrink as long as I have, I wouldn't be surprised that they would be neglectful. It wouldn't shock me. I'd almost view it as a nice bonus if they were involved. But I wouldn't be rattled if they're not, because, unfortunately, one, without religion, it's a lot easier to be self-centered. And even with religion, if it doesn't penetrate who you are, you can still focus on yourself, especially when demands become inconvenient, like visiting and calling a 97-year-old mother.
Yeah.
Your anger is coming from your expectation. I expect that they would act like loving children. This woman has given so much to them, and this is what they return to her. How dare they? That's what you're thinking is.
I think it's disrespect, yeah.
Well, of course it is. Of course it is.
Yeah.
But the problem is, you don't want it to be disrespect. In other words, they shouldn't be doing this. But, Dave, they are doing it.
Yeah,
I think...
I mean, the bar's not that high. She has cousins that are in their 80s that call her and send her cards on every holiday.
Well, it says something about these kids, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, she's 97. Yeah. They're probably in their 60s. So...
Right.
They're not kids. They're just, and that tells you that maybe they've just gotten so immersed in their own lives that they don't have the time to take a minute and two or call mom. But here's the other thing. I would suggest that you get down on your knees and you thank God as often as you can for the privilege of taking care of your mother-in-law.
Yes, thank you.
It's probably the most charitable thing you've ever done in your life.
Well, I have a lot of mistakes to make up for, so...
Well, all right, lopping some days off purgatory. But think about it, Dave. You were pushed into these circumstances.
Yeah.
Didn't know it was coming. 10 years ago, you didn't know this was coming.
No.
You're pushed into these circumstances, and you have found that the Lord has allowed you... He's given you the opportunity to do something so good. And the fact that her children are not even in the smallest way taking any part of this is sad for them. It's terribly sad for them.
It is.
And who knows, well, I can't say, but if I were to shoot from the hip, I would wonder what kind of life they're living. My guess would be there may be a lot of struggles in those lives, which is encompassing them and keeping them from reaching outward. I'm not saying that's a reason or an excuse, but it could be one explanation.
When our expectations for minimal, kind, responsible, charitable behavior are not met, as Dave said, a call? For heaven's sakes, what's a call take? I'm not asking you to come over and rewire her house. We get very frustrated, and we compare that to what should be being done given the gratitude those kids should have toward their mother, and they don't. One thing I've learned in my life, maybe it's being a shrink, is that sadly, and I'm not a nihilist and I'm not a skeptic, I'm not a cynic, but sadly I'm not surprised when people that you would think would show a level of compassion, understanding, charity, don't. It doesn't surprise me. The other thing I've noticed is that a lot of elderly parents, their children become frustrated with them. Or their children avoid them
Because why? Well, they're getting older, they're getting difficult, they're getting more frail, they get more forgetful, maybe they're starting into dementia. It's just out of my comfort zone. And that happens, and I've seen it happen a lot. But it's a good thing there's guys like Dave and his wife to step in. Because, see, the standards that they are using to gauge their behavior, and I'm going to assume that they're Christian standards following the Master, because they listen to Catholic radio, may be quite different than the standards the others follow. I'm not saying they don't profess them, they just don't follow them. One other thing, just, he said this in passing, I don't have time to deal with it too deeply. She made a deathbed promise to her sister, I'll take care of mom, I'll take care of mom, I'll take care of mom. Deathbed promises are dangerous. I think they always need to be qualified. I will do so as long as the situation allows or as long as I can. Because a deathbed promise essentially binds you into a situation that could be untenable. It may be that mom just simply cannot be managed in home. Thank you for joining me. Thank you, Andrew Krucek. Thank you for keeping me company. I appreciate it very much. Walk with God all the way into eternity and beyond.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.